Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv Eskana for immigration.com, Law Offices of Rajiv Eskana PC. This is a community conference call of August 5th, 2010. Call is being recorded. If you do not wish your voice to be recorded, please hang up now. Keep your identity confidential when you speak with me. Just because we are answering questions here does not make us your lawyers, nor does it make you our clients. This is purely an informational session. With that said, let me get started on the questions that have been posted on forums.immigration.com. Question number one, M. Sriram, can my current experience be considered for EB-2 filing? He joined Sun as a software engineer with 3 years of work experience with an undergrad degree in computer science, worked for Sun 10 years. Sun got EB-3 approval of the labor certification, I guess. 4 months back, Oracle has acquired Sun, new offer letter, but same team as product manager, which requires 8 years of software engineering experience. They want to sponsor. Can I file under EB-2? Yes. It looks very, very likely, extremely likely, that you can file under EB-2. There are two reasons. I'll tell you why. One is, if the two companies before takeover and after takeover have a separate tax ID number, then under the law, you can use the experience gained with Sun and transpose it over to who took over. Oracle took over. So Sun to Oracle, if two different tax IDs, there is no question about that. Even otherwise, if the two jobs, software engineer and product or project manager, are more than 50% different and the tax ID was still the same, you could still have used that experience. So the answer is yes, you should go ahead and apply for EB-2. I think it's very likely it can be done. Next question, B-Lore. I'm currently in Bangalore, India, applying for jobs in USA, three consultancy firms. He's got three firms. Wants to know which one is a good H-1 prospect. One is newly formed with just two other employees. They have no H-1 negative history, so sponsorship will be easy. That's the claim of the company. Second is 9 years history, 300-plus employees, but they had some problems for not following procedures. And they had a lot of H-1 rejections. Third company has 10 H-1 consultants, moderate size, but they are asking for $2,500 security deposit. By the way, that's completely illegal. So this company is absolutely doing things that are against the law. You definitely, if they ask you for a deposit or any such thing, they can actually be investigated. So yeah, this is a company I would definitely not want you to go with. The company that has problems, I don't know what kind of problems, I would be more inclined to go with A or B, but definitely not C. Next question, posting on behalf of a friend. Current company is planning to send me to USA on L1A visa. Can I apply for a green card? Yes. The requirements of L1A and EB-1-based green card are exactly the same. So if you qualify for an L1A, and that L1A was properly approved, you should have no problem getting EB-1. Next question, that's a green card, employment-based first category, green card, okay? Next question is GC issue. Parents are green card holders. They went to India last October, but they can't come back for more than a year, I guess. Well, they can't come back after 1 year. If they do, after 1 year, they lose their green card automatically, unless they can apply for what is called returning resident permit. They have to go back to the consulate and explain to the consulate why they were outside for more than a year. The consulate will then reprocess their green card. Takes a few months, 4 or 5 months, maybe a little bit less. And they are given a returning resident permit, which allows them to come back to USA and get their green card. So if you want to surrender their green card, filing I-407, that's okay. But there is no guarantee that they will be able to get a visitor visa if they surrender their green card, because the consular officers view the earlier existence of a green card sometimes to be a negative factor for grant of a tourist visa. Don't ask me why, but sometimes they consider that to be a negative factor and they can deny the tourist visa. Then the only option you would have is to reapply for their green card and bring them back in. You can always file an I-130 again at any time. That's no problem. Guest 12 says, my cousin is on H-1B visa, I-140 filed, waiting to file 485. PD is August 2007 EB2. Wants to leave for India to attend some personal issues and take care of his parents for a maximum of a year or so. Works for a consultant company with one vendor between him and his employer. Does not have H-1B stamping, but H-1 is good till 2011. Can he go to India and get H-1 stamped after a few months, which may or may not happen because of employer-employee issue? He can do that, but I think he should get the H-1 stamping as soon as he gets back to India. Can he file for consular processing now? Yes, he can. He can. Can you provide us a link for any documentation needed for consular processing? Well, there is no link that I know of. Basically, it begins by filing a form I-824. But you should get your lawyers to handle it. Don't try to dabble with it yourself. Number three, is there a possibility for priority date to move to August 2007 in a couple of months? I have no idea. What happens if H-1 is rejected? Will consular processing be affected? It can be, but normally it should not be. The consulate could come back and say, well, it does not look like you have an employer-employee relationship. Therefore, even the green card should be not granted or revoked. So far, they have not done that, but they could very well do it. I mentioned in the beginning of this conference call to somebody else, we hadn't started recording then, I mentioned to that gentleman, I said, listen, if you leave an existing job that was your green card job and you go back to your home country for 6 months, a year, 2 years, it puts very grave doubt on whether there really exists a permanent job for you. Okay? Because think about it this way. If I'm at a permanent job and my employer can let me go for a year, year and a half, it doesn't look like they have a permanent job. If they did, who is doing it? So that could become an issue as well. Next question, Chris 2010, I-140 issue after AOS approval. He has some back wages unpaid from his H-1B days. He left the employer without doing AC-21, and before he could send an AC-21, the case was approved. Now, when he's asking for his money, the old employer is telling you, I'll revoke the I-140. I wouldn't worry about that, Chris. I would actually go ahead and send a complaint to the Department of Labor if this employer doesn't want to give you your money. Okay? Can they revoke the I-140? Not after the green card approval. And unless there is some fraud committed by you or by the employer, there is nothing they can do to hurt you. You should go ahead and complain to the Department of Labor right away, okay? Because you might be losing time. I think the deadline is usually a year, but I don't know. Just go ahead and complain. Let's see what happens. Next question is from Jay, who says, my mother's name in her citizenship, U.S. citizenship, was Jyoti, but old Indian passport is Jyoti Bain. You see, this kind of situation is fairly common amongst the Gujarati community. So if you can provide an affidavit from yourself and maybe from the temple priest or somebody else from the community as well, one of the two, three people can give this affidavit, saying that it's common in our community to refer to people as, you know, Jyoti Bain or Jay Bhai. So go ahead and do that. That should take care of this problem. Sarah 12. Sarah 12 says, husband has a pending 485 in EB3. Wife is dependent. Wife also has EB2 I-140 approved from same employer. How can husband wife take advantage of wife's EB2 current date without refiling new 485? Well, here is what I've seen happen. If your I-140 is already there, and your priority date becomes current, I have seen INS convert your dependent 485 to primary and your husband's to derivative without filing new paperwork. So I've seen them do that. You can certainly contact the customer service when the priority date becomes current. You will know 15 days, 20 days ahead of time when the priority date for you becomes current. At that point, I would start contacting consulate, and they should be able to convert your pending 485. And they do. I have known USCIS to do it themselves without being asked. Next question is Snowman. Company is considering filing green card. They want to go with a local immigration lawyer because sometimes you might have to go to USCIS. Well, I have been doing this for 25 years. Our local clients are only about 1% of our total client base. 99% of our clients are from all over the country. So I don't see this as a major issue, but there are employers and employees who are concerned that what if I am scheduled for an interview, which is very, very unlikely in employment-based cases. But let me rephrase that. Not very, very, but it is unlikely. And most of these interviews tend to be just a formality. I have never gone for an interview. Well, twice I've gone for an interview. Once, I think, in New York. Somebody's case was very complicated. They paid a lot of money for me to actually go there. Because, you know, it for me to have a 10-hour day outside work environment, that's a good $6,000-$7,000 out of somebody's pocket. So I had to travel all that way, and it was all it took was 2 minutes. And I had told the employer that this is an unnecessary thing that they are paying me for, but they wanted me to go. So yes, very rarely it is possible that you may be required to go to INS office locally, and for whatever reason you feel that you need a lawyer with you. Most of these cases tend to be straightforward. A local lawyer is not necessary. Next question, June 1st, CR1 visa, I-864 and IRS debt. There is an outstanding IRS debt, so the question is, will my income be adequate? Should I list my assets? Well, you have to do all of that, and I think you should use a co-sponsor. Whenever in doubt, it is better to use a co-sponsor. And I do think that it could become an issue for you. Permanent residence in two countries. Now, in this case, what we've got is we've got Canada and U.S. permanent residence. And I've always been very offended by CBP's heavy-handedness about, oh, how come you have permanent residence of Canada and U.S.? Oh, wait a minute. You should be concerned only with U.S. permanent residence. I, the U.S. taxpayer, pay your wages, not the Canadian taxpayer. So it is none of your concern if I have permanent residence of Canada. Your concern should only be this. Am I, in fact, living in USA or not? If I'm not, for example, if I have a re-entry permit, then is that re-entry permit legitimately applied for? The problem is this. Look, if you were actually living in USA and you were traveling to Canada very frequently, but actually living and working in USA, they couldn't do anything to you. But when you have a re-entry permit, remember, a re-entry permit is not a guarantee of readmission into the United States. It is merely an expression of your intention to stay in the United States. Okay? The government can still revoke your green card, even if you have a re-entry permit. They normally don't, but they could. Okay, now the question is, must you surrender one or the other within a year? Now, I don't know the answer to this question. I would want you to do a detailed call with either me or any other lawyer, because this is not an issue that we can discuss over a 15-minute transaction. I would like to know a lot more about your background, how you are staying in Canada, what you're doing there, what are your contacts with USA, how many years did you live here before you moved back to Canada. All these things need to be discussed. And then we can probably give you some idea, and that too would not be 100% safe no matter what we tell you. If you want to be 100% safe, move back to USA, and that's the only way you can keep your green card. Everything else is going to have some element of risk. Next question, BSAC, automatic visa revalidation. Okay, I don't think you mean that. I think you mean something different. Your case is that you had an H1 and but you did not have a visa stamping done. You went outside USA, re-entered using parole, advanced parole. So really, let me first of all tell you this. Under Cronin Memorandum, C as in Charlie, R-O, N as in Nancy, I, N as in Nancy, if you do a search on immigration.com or forums, I think it's in the forums, you should be able to see the Cronin Memorandum. I posted it somewhere. Cronin Memorandum is still good law, and it says if you come back on advanced parole, we still consider you to be on H-1. Whether or not you have visa stamping is irrelevant. So right now you are still on H-1B status. There is no question of the last action rule. So if you are an H-1, why should you not be able to use ADR? I think you should be able to. And if there are any other issues, you can always use advanced parole, sure. Would entry using AVR be considered as lawful admission? Yes, sir. Yes, sir. For 245K purposes also. But remember, 245K only applies to cases where you are filing a 485 after that entry. So I don't know what you're thinking of, but 245K would not otherwise help you. So, but yeah, that entry from Canada would count for 245K purposes. I don't see why not. Flower Girl 123, denial of F1 visa. Sister was in USA. She took one course less than she was required to. Lost status by mistake. She goes back, applies for a visa. Consulate says, you don't need a visa. You've never worked without authorization. She goes back. Says, no, I do need a visa. And the counselor says, oh, you lied to us last time. You didn't tell us that you were out of status. Well, the only thing that I can think of that you can do about this is you can contact your congressman's office, explain the situation to them, get them to write a letter or email to the consulate, and get them to reevaluate the case. I think they are making a mistake. Okay? Next question is a question about deportation. I'm sorry, I don't do exclusion and deportation cases. You need to speak with a lawyer who practices before immigration courts. Our practice is limited to federal courts, U.S. federal courts. So we only deal with cases that involve going to federal court. We don't deal with immigration courts. Next question, Arpit Shah, investment visa question. Are government mutual fund investments qualified in EB-5? No, because you have to create 10 American jobs. Or you have to invest in a scheme that has been approved by USCIS for investment purposes. And those schemes typically are regional centers, and it has nothing to do with mutual fund investments, etc. Any source to find targeted employment areas? Good question. Normally what I would do is I would start with the state business development agency. I know that California has designated a large number of targeted employment areas. By the way, a targeted employment area can be either designated by the government or it can be a rural area. Or it can be 150% unemployment area, which brings me to your next question. 150% unemployment, I think we determine it, if I remember correctly, through census figures. Unemployment, yeah, we do it through census, U.S. Census Bureau's data. Okay. Now, remember the law. The law is on the date you make the investment or the date you file the forms with USCIS, whichever is later. That's the date when the figure must be 150%. If after that it goes down, it does not stop you from filing the form. Next question, Andrew GC, 485 got approved June 8th. Received notice, basically they want to fingerprint, but he's not received any fingerprint notice. The question is, am I a green card holder? Yes. When you get your 45 approval, you are a green card holder. The actual issuance of the plastic card is merely evidence. Evidence, okay? So, what they do is what is called edit processing, which is basically biometrics for your green card. That is just another step in preparing the physical green card. Your green card status has already been approved. So, yes, you are a green card holder. Charm 23, H1EAD AOS H1, green card filed August 2007. Company A filed the green card, moved over to company B. They have not yet filed the AC-21. He was working on EAD, but INS gave him an I-94 upon the H1 approval. Does my status automatically change to H1? Well, they have made a mistake. So, my advice in cases of USCIS mistake is more conservative than most lawyers. I say, look, if they made a mistake, you're better off assuming that they have approved the case in mistake and not take advantage of that mistake. So I think it's better to get a visa stamping if you want to convert back to H1. As USCIS issued a new I-94, does my status automatically change to H1B? It does. Do I need to go out of the country? I think you should. Simply because don't take advantage of U.S. Government mistakes is a good rule to follow. Next question, if I need a visa, is it advisable to go to Mexico? I don't know your case. I don't know how problematic your case is. If you are, you know, working for a good company, in-house, straightforward project, I think you're okay. You can go to Mexico, and you have a U.S. degree, I think you can go to Mexico. But there are too many variables for me to comment. Oh, by the way, yes. Just because you have applied for a green card has absolutely no bearing on your H-1. H-1 visa by law is permitted to have dual intent. By statute, you're allowed to have a green card pending, so that's no problem at all. Next question, a change employer. Perm was filed, I-140 is pending. Can I change employers without losing my priority date if current employer won't revoke my I-140? You can, but I feel very uncomfortable. I think you should just premium your I-140. Once it gets approved, then you can leave. Can I change employer this stage without? Yeah, you can, but I don't recommend it. You can. I think you're okay. If my new employer will file fresh H-1B, is it possible to recapture my old priority date? Yes. Once your I-140 is approved, you get your old priority date transferred over to the new case that the employer will file. What is the visa backlog rule? I don't know what that is, Sean. I have no idea what rule you're talking about. So if you're on the call, we could probably talk about it a little bit more. The reason I'm rushing through these questions a little bit is because I am a little pressed for time this afternoon. But at the same time, I also want to address issues that some people had before we started the conference call. There were four or five people who seemed to have questions. So I want to rush through these, but I hope I'm covering everything that everybody has asked for. But if not, you can always ask me questions as I put everybody back online. So the last question was from Jagdish, which was not posted on our forums. He sent it to me through our LinkedIn, through my LinkedIn form. And Jagdish says, Rajiv, what do we do? 485 application is approved for myself and my family. Families in India, coming back in August, they have a valid advance parole. So the question is, can they enter USA on advance parole? It's a very, very tough question to answer. Very, very tough question to answer. You see, the problem is, there is no memo from USCIS. Actually, this is a CBP concern. CBP, okay? We have called CBP on this issue just this week. They have said they have no problem with people entering like that. When we called the U.S. consulate just to confirm this, the U.S. consulate said, oh, no, 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 you can't go in. Now you have to apply for following to join, which means 1.5 years. Nonsense. Okay? As a practical matter, we've got at least 2 clients in the last 6 months in exactly the same situation. They re-entered using advance parole, had no problem. You use your own judgment. Okay? I have also seen clients send out original green cards back to their spouse and child, and they entering on the green card. I don't know if that's such a good idea. I definitely think this issue is an open issue. You can call CBP, Customs and Border Protection. They are usually very responsive. They may not know the exact nature of your problem, but they try to help any way they can. You can try to ask them this question, the same question. I think your son and wife are going to be fine with the advance parole, but there really is no real law on this issue. Okay? That said, I'm pretty much done with all the questions. Here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to put folks here in a what is called a question and answer mode. So if you want to talk with me, you can press *6 on the phone, and after you're done talking with me, please *6 again so that you can mute yourself. The first set of questions I will take is from those people who have already posted. All the others I'll take later. So let's start with people who have posted first, please.
Hi, Rajiv. This is guest 12 who had a question about stamping in India for employer-employee relationship situation.
Right.
Do you think it's advisable to go to stamping in this situation? And if so, what would be the kind of information that would prove this relationship?
Until the U.S. government loses the case that has been filed against them in Washington, D.C., it's very difficult for me to comment about what can prove it. We have tried various permutation combinations. The strongest evidence usually is the evidence that your performance is being reviewed and your work is being reviewed by the employer, coupled with a letter from the end client that clearly states that they are not supervising you on your day-to-day activities.
There is a situation where there is a primary vendor in between the client as well as the employer, so the primary vendor takes care of most of these things.
Okay, well, that's the same problem then. If the primary vendor is supervising you, then USCIS, in my view, illegally thinks that you are no longer the employee of your H-1 sponsoring employer. So definitely it appears to be a dangerous situation to try to get an H-1 visa.
Okay. And another question on the F-1 visa. The question is it possible for a F-1 student who has completed the requirements of the course to extend 6 months before graduating by only doing the thesis, which is 2 coursework? Is it permissible under law?
To the best of my knowledge, it is done all the time.
Okay, thank you.
But what you can do is, actually, in fact, in my law school, I did the same thing. What I did was, in my last semester, I only took 3 credits because I wanted to prepare for the bar exam. But I was able to maintain F1. See, what happens in the last semester, you are allowed to take less than a full course load as long as you are taking the entire remaining amount of your courses. So if I have only 3 credits left, then I don't have to take 15. I just have to take 3. Okay?
Okay.
So double check with your international students office, but I can only speak from personal experience. And as I remember, that's the rule. Okay, good luck to you.
Hello. This is Shyam.
Yeah, Shyam, go ahead.
I asked you a question regarding H-1, EAD, and H-1. So basically, I joined this full-time company, which is a big client, like above 4,000 employees.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a H-1 approved recently based on my 140 approval.
Mm-hmm.
So is it advisable for me to go to Mexico because it's very near for me?
Oh, absolutely. In your case, is your degree from USA or from India?
Yeah, from US, Masters.
Which school?
It's New Mexico State University.
You see, the only my only concern is that they could just say that we can't verify your degrees from here. Did you come to USA on H-1 visa?
No, on F-1 visa.
F-1. Have you ever... No, wait a minute. You said you came to USA on F-1 visa?
Yeah, USA on F-1 visa, right.
So you finished your degree in USA, right?
Right.
Oh, so you have a U.S. American degree, right?
Right, master's degree.
Oh, then there is no problem. Yeah, absolutely. Go to Mexico. It looks like an easy case to get processed.
But what about this change of status? Do I need to worry much? No,
I think, look, you currently have 45 cents, correct?
Right.
You also have EAD, correct?
Right.
So both staying in USA as well as working is permitted under 45 pending and EAD.
Okay.
You are not doing anything illegal. Even assuming you were not given COS, you are doing exactly what you were supposed to be.
So if something happens in Mexico, can I come
on
advance parole?
You can come back on advance parole, no question about it.
And I have filed my AC-21. Do you suggest I file the AC-21 before I attend the visa?
I think it's always a good idea. In these cases where the government might be made aware of the change, yes, you should file AC-21 before you go.
Okay, what is the procedure like for AC-21?
AC-21 is just a letter. Let your employer's lawyer handle it. It's not that complicated.
Okay, all right.
Good luck to you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Next question. Yes, sir. Please say your name. Make up a name. I don't care.
This is Srini.
Ashri, go ahead.
My question is a little bit complicated. I filed for...
Wait. Hang on, Sri. Have you posted your question?
Oh, no. Earlier I posted it.
I'm going to ask you to hold for a minute after I have... Finish talking with people who have posted, and I'll get to you, okay?
So, Mr. Ali, Sean here. I posted my question also.
Just one second, ma'am. Are you one of the postees?
Yes, I believe I posted a question.
Go ahead.
Regarding the permanent residence in two countries, I believe it was question 12.
No, what is the question?
It was regarding the permanent residence in the two countries.
Oh, yes, Canada.
Yes, in Canada. And I'm sorry, I did not, I was not able to call at the beginning. I heard
part. I don't like to repeat my answers because
I'm not asking you.
Right. But let me give you the brief answer that I had. The answer was that if you were actually living in USA, U.S. authorities could not question which other countries you are a permanent resident of. That's none of their concern. But if you have a reentry permit and you are living outside USA, they can call into question your intention to remain in USA or, in fact, that you've lost your green card. They can do that.
Okay.
So under the circumstances, the safest thing is for you to move back to USA, establish your residence here if you want to have 100% security in being able to stay in USA. Okay, and I also said that this is a very difficult question to answer without a detailed consultation.
That's exactly. I would like to just find out what I need to do. I would like to speak personally with you,
What you can do is just send us an email through the contact us form on our website.
Okay.
And I will be happy to set up a call for you. Somebody from our office will get in touch with you. Let me go over your case with you independently because this is going to take time. It's not something
okay.
I can
answer. Of course. Thank you so much.
I hope to hear from you. Bye-bye.
Yes.
Hello, Mr. Ravi. This is Sean. I already posted my question as well.
Yes, sir. What was your question?
Regarding the change of status, can you retain the priority date even if the I-140 will be revoked by the current employer?
I didn't understand that question. Repeat it, please.
Can I retain the priority date, to the new employer even if the I-140 gets revoked by the current employer?
Okay. Once an I-140 is approved, you get to keep your priority date even if the employer revokes the I-140, except where USCIS revokes the I-140 for fraud or for the employer ceasing to do business. So, if the employer goes out of business and USCIS revokes your I-140, or if the I-140 is revoked by USCIS for fraud, you lose your priority date. Otherwise, you do not. Even if the employer revokes it, no problem.
Okay. And do we need the actual receipt letter copy or just the receipt number will be okay for the new employer?
So, see, Punjabi lag rahe ho main.
Yes, I am from Punjab.
Haan, main lag gaya, main kaha, jara, saade, kehnde nahi, Punjabi de tinda jithe marzi pa do, apna lag nahi chhad da.
Haan ji, haan ji, sahi pehchan hai ji.
So, no, getting back to English, I don't see any issue at all. If the employer wants to revoke the I-140, it should not hurt you at all at this point of time. Your priority date is your property.
Right. And if they will not give me the receipt letter copy,
it's better to have some evidence. It's better to, if you can get a copy of the approval notice, it's great. If you don't have a copy of the approval notice, at least your A number, whatever receipt number.
No, number I do have.
Then at least, I know that we have done cases of priority date transfer with just the receipt number.
Right. Okay.
Okay.
And is there
by the way, before I forget, you can also file a Privacy Act request / FOIA, Freedom of Information Act request, with the government to get a copy of all your paperwork. And they might give you a copy of your I-140 approval because of that also.
Right, okay. And Mr. Rajiv, do USCIS scrutinize more in case of premium processing or it is the same as of regular processing?
That's not my experience. I think it's the same.
It's the same. Because my I-140 is in process. I want to do the premium processing, you know.
Yeah, so, I don't see any problem with it. At least I have not seen any higher scrutiny than normal.
Right, and can I file, even if I will get an RFP in the I-140, I can still file my one-year H-1 extension based upon my perm filed in the fifth year, beyond
not,
6 years.
Not only that, let's say the worst thing happens. Let's say your I-140 gets denied.
Right.
Okay? If you file an appeal against it, while the appeal is pending, you can keep getting H-1 extension. The appeal typically stays pending 2.5 years.
Right, okay.
For that, you must be on good terms with your employer, because if they don't want to file an appeal, then you can't do anything.
Right, okay.
All right.
Definitely. And Mr. Rajiv, is this there shouldn't be any disadvantage if I want to change employer at this time?
It's a very difficult question to answer. There are too many variables. Are you going to a better employer? Are you going to a better category? Too many issues that I can't really answer that question. Normally speaking, there should not be any difference. If both employers are the same.
Right. Okay. So only the thing is, once I will get the I-140 approved, then it's the best to change employers.
I would prefer that, yes.
Who was here?
Hello.
In that case, hello.
Yeah, I'm listening to you, sir. Go ahead.
So otherwise, I will not be able to retain the priority date.
No, I didn't say that. I think you will still be able to if the I-140 gets approved. But, you know, think about it. What incentive does the employer have to continue with the I-140 if you leave? On top of that, what incentive do they have to file an appeal if you already left?
Right. So my I-140 is in process. You know,
I understand. I read your question. So anyhow.
Right.
That's what I'm suggesting. Let me move on to somebody else, okay? Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, anyone else who has posted a question already?
Muhammad here.
Yes, Muhammad, go ahead.
I'm changing my employer.
Hang on 1 second. Have you posted a question on the forum yet, sir?
Yeah, immigration.com, I posted, I think, a few days back.
Immigration, no, I'm talking about the forum. Hang on 1 second. Let me. Anybody else from the portal, guys? Anybody else on the forum?
Rajiv, this is Andrew GC here for the 485 question.
Yes, Andrew, go ahead.
Should I be concerned that the USCIS website says something else than the notice that I have in my hand?
What does the USCIS website say? Remind me.
The website says that the I-485 application to register permanent resident adjust status is transferred as currently being processed at a local USCIS office.
But you already have an approval, right?
Yeah, on my hand, yes.
Okay, I think you should clarify this. That gives me a little reason to doubt what is going on. Go ahead and clarify this through the USCIS customer service.
So I should open a service request?
Not a bad idea.
Okay. Should I also make an info pass to get maybe a stamp or something? Or just
that's always a good idea.
All right, cool. Thank you.
Rajiv, another quick question. Gestrov, who had posted a question before.
Yeah.
It's regarding the surrendering of green card 407 form. that is not available at all in USCIS sites. So is it still in vogue or?
Consulate should have it.
Okay. So is it should we request an appointment from the consulate or should we go in just straight?
Best thing, start with an email to the consulate.
Okay. Thank you.
Good luck. All right. Anybody else? All right. I'm going to start first with Shree, then Muhammad. Shree, go ahead, please. Shree?
Rajiv. Sorry about that. We filed our green card in September 2005,
mm-hmm.
In the concurrent process, and my 140 approved in November 2006.
Okay.
Now our case is moving between, like initially we filed it in VSC, Vermont Service Center, and then it has transferred back to TSC, and the case is moving between Vermont to Texas and Texas to Vermont, and now it is in Vermont from May 28, 2010. And now my date is current, my like ED2 India, and my PR date is July 27, 2005.
Okay.
And I haven't seen any improvement, and recently in the forums and wherever I see that the cases are approving from like September, October, November, December 2005 like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I recently made a call to customer service, and they sent a response saying that my 485 continues to be pending review and final adjudication.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know how long will it take, and by the time October it may go back to retrogress and all these things. So I'm a little worried, like
I think you should go through a congressman's office to see what's going on with your case.
Okay.
Open an start a request with the congressman's office. Let them follow it up for you.
Uh-huh. And can I do any mandamus, writ of mandamus or something like that?
I would suggest writ of mandamus only as a last option when you are totally sick and tired. Remember, a writ of mandamus, first of all, only gets you adjudication. It does not get you positive adjudication. In other words, it only forces the government to make a decision, not to make a decision in your favor.
Okay.
What do they do? When you file a writ of mandamus, they send you a 25-page RFE.
Okay.
This has been, it's become, I think it's a very unfair thing for the government to do. It is a sleazy thing. It is extremely unprofessional, but they do it. I have seen it happen in many, many cases. On top of that, there are some jurisdictional issues with I-485 adjudications. So it becomes complicated. You want to spend, you know, thousands of dollars. At least you want to have some safety. So my advice to you, sir, is if you have no other option and you're sick and tired, you just want a decision, yes or no, then you file a mandamus.
Okay. So I can try to congressman then?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Muhammad, go ahead. No, Muhammad?
I'm changing my employer just because they are doing on EB2. And I'm from India having 3 years Bachelor of Computer Science plus 2 years Masters of Computer Science.
Muhammad, what is your bachelor's? Both in Computer Science?
In Computer Science, yeah.
Very good. And do you have 5 years of experience after your Master's?
Yeah. I have 15 years of experience.
You should be able to qualify for EB2.
And because they are worried about the educational equivalency, my attorney and my company.
No. You qualify for EB2.
Even though job doesn't require 5 plus years, 60
years. Job has to require bachelor's plus 5 years of experience.
Job also requires bachelor's plus 3 years.
Bachelor's plus 5 years, right?
Yeah.
Then it is an EB2 case. What is the problem?
They are a little bit worried and concerned that, you know, if it is not going to happen, then we will go back to EB3. That's what they are just using.
Look, either your lawyer doesn't know what they are doing,
mm-hmm.
or there is more to it that I don't know about. There is only two possibilities. From what you have described to me, a 3 plus 2 year degree in the same subject.
Right.
15 years of experience, a job requires 5 years. I don't see why not. Go for it.
That's the clear case, so the employer, I just want to double check with you. Also, in case, you know, like for some reason they messed up on EB2, can I recover the time if you applied on EB2?
Actually, the way we draft these applications, we make sure that appropriate protective language is put in the draft, in the labor certification. So if for some reason EB2 is not approved, EB3 is definitely approved.
Okay. Any help from the faster processing from the new immigration reform?
Mohammed, I'll have to be a Nujumi, an astrologer, to give an answer to that question. We'll see what happens.
Okay. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You're welcome. Good luck, sir.
Rajiv, thank you, Jagdish. I'm on mute and I was trying to call you. I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. No problem. Star 6 is what you had to do. But go ahead, Jagdish. What's up?
This is regarding I-485 approved. USPS local office, I heard your statement.
Right.
And they said that it is no big deal. All your wife has to do is show the advance payroll.
Exactly. No, I have had two clients in the last 6 months come into USA with the same facts without any problem. Okay.
Right.
I also had one client who sent his green card out to his wife and she came back without any problem showing the green card. So there are many permission combinations to this. I prefer that people re-enter using advanced parole. I personally don't think it's a problem. Consulate, I don't know if somebody was in a bad mood or somebody was ill-advised. I don't know what's the problem. But they said, oh, no, you have to do following to join. So I'm telling you what the government is saying. In my view, the only agency that matters is CBP because they are the ones who have to let you enter. Okay.
Right.
And if they
say
you can enter, no problem.
Okay. So basically, at the port of entry, should because I'll be getting the welcome letter in a day or two, should I send a scanned copy of the welcome letter? I think the question I'm trying to ask is, should my wife tell that my green card is approved while I'm on travel?
If she's asked, yes, but there's no reason for her to open her mouth. See, normally, when they process her advance parole, they should be able to see that the green card has been approved.
Right. She already has the advance payroll with her.
I know. What I'm saying is, Jagdish, you're not listening to me. What I'm saying is, when she comes in and they process her advance parole papers, they should be able to see on their screen that her green card is already approved.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Okay. Unless they ask.
Why should I talk about something that is in the gray area? Why should I?
Okay. But I would ask her to keep the welcome notice, okay, the scanned copy in her, file in case they ask.
There is no harm in it.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. So, are you suggest me going back to India and carry the cards and postpone the trip a little bit and bring my family as a green card, green card?
I don't think legally it makes even a little bit of difference.
Okay.
Okay. But practically, I don't know the answer to that question because, like I said, we've had people travel without any problems.
Right. Yeah. I was talking to the other lawyer. He's saying that, don't talk like that. You are telling the CBP officer, you're asking him to show how to tie, put his shoe lace. Okay. Man, this is pretty basic. You should not have any problems. Something like that, he said.
I don't think it is that clear.
I don't think.
But again, you know, many times law is a very complex field of endeavor. There may be something this other lawyer knows that I don't know. But it's doubtful. I've been doing the same thing for 25 years, and I think I pretty much know everything there is to know about most things. Of course, I do learn something new every day. But in this case,
but in the worst case scenario, what can happen? They can ask them to. They will ask them to go back.
Ask them to go back and then come through following to join, which means another 6-8 months, 1 year of processing time. But it's not the end of the world. I don't think it's going to happen.
Okay. Anyhow, thanks for your suggestion.
You're welcome. Good luck, Jagdish.
Hi, Rajiv. This is Hassan. I have one question. Can I ask you?
Please go ahead.
Yeah, Rajiv, I have a H-1 valid and EAD valid, and after some time, I started using EAD, and then H-1 expired.
Okay.
And now, later on, after using the EAD for a couple of years, and if I wanted to file the H-1 again,
problem. You can always go back to H-1. The only thing is, when you've been using EAD, back onto H-1 requires two things. One, getting an H-1 approval from USCIS, and two, getting a visa stamp from the government.
Okay, so I need to go back to the consulate?
Get a visa stamp. When you re-enter showing that visa stamp, you're back on H-1.
Okay, so suppose if I don't want to go back to the country, is it still I can stay here and continue the work?
You can continue on EAD, but you can't use H-1. H-1 needs to be activated by going out and coming in.
Okay, so the prerequisite is you have to go back to the and come back again.
To go back, get a visa stamp and come back using the visa.
Okay. All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Good luck. Folks, anybody else has a question? Very good. Thank you all for being here, and I'll talk to you again in a couple of weeks. Good luck.
Thank you, Raju.
Thank you, Raju.
Bye. Take care.
Hello.